Telephone 746-902. Suppliers of trophies, cups, trays, medals, plaques and tankards. Tom Watkins of the Trophy Gallery can supply your football clubs, in fact all sporting organisations, with the best in trophies and medals. First class engraving also carried out. So why not call into Tom today and you can be assured of fair play at the Trophy Gallery, 19 North Frederick Street, Dublin 1. Telephone 746-902.
For 35p a day, what newspaper gives you Ireland's liveliest news stories? The number one for colour sports coverage, the brightest TV guide around, the best rock and pop news, the hottest TV and entertainment gossip, and a chance to play Superstars Bingo with £250,000 in prizes. A free microwave oven a week from now till Christmas. American football, two trips to Florida for the Super Bowl. Lots and lots of free £1 Yankee bets. It's all in your star. It's Ireland's brightest daily. It's only 35p. Don't miss it.
Ho, ho, budget vision. If you want the best value in colour TVs, hi-fi units and video recorders, visit Budget Vision in Mary Street. Budget Vision in Mary Street have colour TVs from an unbeatable £130, hi-fi units from an unbeatable £199, and video recorders from an unbeatable £299. Not only is each item guaranteed, but you also get a free surprise gift with every purchase. So beat the Christmas rush and pop along to Budget Vision in Mary Street for unbeatable value in TVs, hi-fi units and video recorders. Access and Visa cards welcome and personal loans arranged. That's Budget Vision, 53 Mary Street, Dublin. For TVs, hi-fi units and videos, you won't get better value anywhere this Christmas. Ho, ho, ho!
High-tech, hi-fi, low price, that's why you found the high-value hi-fi store.
Ho, ho, ho! Come on, Rudolph, we're off to Budget Vision!
Printform, Airport Road, Collinstown Cross, Slaughterin, County Dublin. For all your print requirements, small offsets, letterheads, invoices, statements, business cards, etc. Why not avail of our efficient and personal service? Telephone us on 428823, that's 428823. Our general section consists of catalogues, magazines, books, also one and two colour posters at very reasonable rates. All typesetting and fax machine service also available at telephone 427-570. That's 427-570. Print form.
Nobody does it better.
Hustle and bustle, the rush and the rustle, the thing so appealing and Christmas lights gleaming.
Radio Dublin, your better music station, bring you yet another unbelievable giveaway.
The bells and the holly, the baking and baking, the giving and taking.
These Telstar Cut Glass Christmas Angels would make an ideal Christmas gift or an excellent decoration over Christmas. To claim your exquisite Telstar Christmas Angel, simply write to us and ask us for one. If you're one of the first 50 to do so, it's yours. It's a free offer from Radio Dublin and Telstar.
Those are the reasons for holiday seasons, the forward to Christmas time.
Write to the Telstar Christmas Angel offer, care of Radio Dublin in Dublin 8.
Everybody looks forward to Christmas. The presents, the sharing, and having a good time. But unfortunately, some underprivileged children don't have anything to look forward to, except hardship and gloom, even at Christmas. But that's where we want to step in. We want to play Santa to these children. However, we can't do it on our own. We need your help. If you'd like to make a child happy this Christmas, a small toy or perhaps a Christmas stocking would do exactly that. To make an underprivileged child happy this Christmas, bring along your gift, or even just a few pence in an envelope, to the Christmas Toy Appeal, Radio Dublin, 58 Inchicore Road, in Dublin 8. That's the Christmas Toy Appeal, Radio Dublin, 58 Inchicore Road, in Dublin 8. And we'll make sure it gets to where it's most needed. Help us to help them who just can't help themselves. Make a child happy this Christmas.
Hi there, people of Dublin. In fact, hello to every caring person who is listening right now. This is Captain Bob. Yes, that's right, Captain Bob the Singing Friar. But who I am is not important. It's what I've got to say that is so important, especially if you care about children. I want to talk to you about Childline. This is a charity which provides help for abused children. Do you know there are thousands of these poor little souls who are beaten mercilessly or sexually abused every single day? They don't understand or know who to turn to. That's where Childline comes in. This is a dedicated group of people who are at the other end of the telephone lines, just waiting for that young child's call. From then on, it's help, kindness and understanding, and most of all, love, to put them back on the right road. This problem in our society concerned me. It concerned me enough to sit down and write a song, sing it, produce a record, and then try to sell it. With all the money from the sales going to the Childline cause, which is so underfunded. I called the song, appropriately, "It's a Good Enough Reason to Care." Please buy it.
This Christmas, think before you drink, before you drive. Merry Christmas from Radio Dublin. On 1188 kHz AM, 105 FM in stereo and shortwave, this is Radio Dublin International.
Live from Dublin City, from dark till dawn with Jerry Marsden on 1188 kilohertz of the medium wave band of the Radio Dublin World Service shortwave.
In stereo and shortwave. This is Radio Dublin International.
A very good afternoon to you. My name is Jerry Marsden and welcome along to Radio Dublin, broadcasting on 1188 AM and 105 FM and shortwave around the world. On today's programme, I will present to you the life story of Radio Dublin. Also on the programme, we'll be playing excerpts from tapes of interviews from various government bodies who were interviewed on Radio Dublin. Also included are government commercials that ran on Radio Dublin on paid advertisement level. We also have government recruitment commercials that were used and paid for in recruitment for our defence forces. During the course of this programme, we hope to bring to you the true story as how Radio Dublin was used for the benefit of various people who held positions in government circles. Assisting me on the programme is one of my colleagues and presenters, Dave Felton. The programme is produced by Captain Eamon Cook, Most of the material that you are about to hear on this program has been taken from our library. Also, our thanks go to the author of the book Radio Radio, John Mulroyne. We shall also hear comments from various radio stations, such as Chris Carey of Radio Nova International, Robbie Robinson of Sunshine Radio, Martin Block of Q102, John May of Class Radio, Jimmy Smith of Treble TR, and Johnny Eccles of Smile FM. Also throughout the programme, we hope to be joined by various people involved in radio. And during the course of the programme, our phone lines at 536644 and 538684 shall remain open for your comments. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Radio Dublin International, Ireland's first independent radio station and the driving wedge for independent radio in Ireland. This is your life. 253. The roots of Radio Dublin can be traced back to a station called Radio Arclear, which Ken Sheen operated from his house in Drimna in 1966. Ironically, it was David Kelly who first got Ken interested in broadcasting, and Ken remembers his early broadcasting days as they were just experimental. He being more interested in the disc-spinning side of broadcasting, Radio Arclea operated on 217 metres, a popular pirate frequency. On Sunday mornings, initially playing pre-recorded programmes made by a friend of Ken's, Roger Lloyd, Ken kept broadcasting through the late 60s and eventually renamed his station Radio Dublin. By 1969, to 70, the early stations like Radio Romeo and Radio Santa Monica had, along with the halfpenny farthings stations, disappeared. In their place, though, there were new stations, for example, Eamon McGovern's Radio Amo and Jack O'Carroll's Radio Jacqueline. They were soon joined by Tony Boylan's Radio Galaxy, making one of its periodic appearances. These three stations, along with Radio Dublin, set up the United Stations Network. The idea was simple. The stations would broadcast on a rota system each Sunday, one part coming off air after another. This way, broadcasting hours could be extended and some could be brought to the separate operations. The idea was tried for a few weeks, but it never caught on. The first of many attempts to unify the pirates had failed. Station operators, it would seem, valued their freedom too highly, even though formal organization ever unified the pirate radios. There have been countless informal relationships between individuals and stations. Radio was more of a club than anything else. And Ken Sheen refers to the early pirates as a circle of friends. In the winter of 1968, David Kelly was involved with Radio Jacqueline. At the time they were experiencing interference on their 217 meter band, David paid a visit to Ken Sheen and asked would he loan, swap or sell the Radio Dublin crystal for 253. Ken lent the crystal, so for a while Radio Jacqueline operated on 253 meters. But Ken began to lose interest in broadcasting, so he passed on the rig to Roger Lloyd, who operated the station from his flat in Crumlin. Whatever the problems associated with running a radio station from a house, operating Radio Dublin from a flat became next to impossible. Flats are always cramped, but with all of Roger's broadcasting equipment, things were getting out of hand. There were batteries, bits of aerials, fuse wire, and of course the bulky transmitter. Add furniture and Mark Story, who was giving a hand, and there wasn't even room to swing a cat's whisker, never mind a cat. Around this time, other stations began to appear on the Dublin dial. In 1970, Radio Vanessa operated from a bedroom in Santry. The room was Declan Means, and as he was helped by his pal Robbie Irwin, Declan remembers that Radio Vanessa was named after a girl up the road, whom she thought he was gorgeous. There must have been something in the Northside air, as both Declan and Robbie were neighbours and often played on the road directly outside Tony Boylan's house. On Wednesday, August the 22nd, a new station started to test broadcast on 224 metres, beside Radio Ulster. The station, Radio Epathy, was the brainchild of Ed McDowell. By September the 9th, the pirate had moved to a clearer frequency of 222 metres, where it stayed. On the 3rd of October, Effethy officially started broadcasting between 1 and 3 p.m. By the 17th, the station was on FM. With Effethy came a new dimension in pirate radio. Regular broadcasts on medium wave and on FM. The station was also the first pirate to give a postal address of 31 Common Street, North Wall. After a while, the address changed to a more prestigious postal residency of 59 Lansdowne Road, Ballsbridge. By February of 1974, Radio Effethy was undoubtedly the most powerful radio pirate in the country, with an estimated output of 150 watts. In 1974, the station was still experimenting with FM on 98.8 megahertz, and broadcasts continued regularly each Sunday. By April of 1974, Effethy was the jewel in the crown of Irish hobby piracy. The station was going from strength to strength when suddenly it was raided. On Saturday, the 6th of April, 1974, Radio Effethy went off the air in the middle of the Ed McDowell show. The transmitter was confiscated, as was nearly all the electrical equipment. They even took Ed's teddy bear. The other pirate operators ran scared. For the remainder of April and into May, June and July, not one single pirate station came on the air. It seemed that the jackpot tactics of the department had worked. Irish radio piracy was dead. After the raid on Effethy, the pirate radio scene went very quiet. In August of 1974, Radio Dublin drifted back on the air. At this stage, Dermot Blake became involved in the station. The Radio Dublin operation had been shifted from Roger's cramped flat to Dermot's house in suburban Drumcondra. With this move to the north side, transmissions began once more, much to the interest of Don Moore. Dermot's sister worked with Don, then's wife, Debbie Moore. And it was thought this connection that Don became involved in pirate radio. With his powerful and domineering personality, Don was soon in the process of taking control of Radio Dublin. After the Effethy raid, no one dared go back on the air, although Radio Dublin did make the odd appearance in late 1974. In early 1975, Declan Meehan blew the dust off the Radio Vanessa transmitter and made the occasional broadcast. But not much happened until March of that year. On the 1st of March 1975, Radio Dublin returned, though this time with a difference. The difference was Don Moore, broadcasting under the name of Dr. Don. At 1 p.m. that day, Dr. Don announced Westside Radio on 225 metres. Don stayed on the air for an hour, and on leaving, Roger Lyatt, Prince Terry, started broadcasting on the old Radio Dublin rig announcing Big D on 253. Don had all but shifted the control of the nomadic Radio Dublin from the hands of Roger Lyatt. At this stage, the station had moved yet again, this time to Don's house in Cabra. As Declan Meehan remembers, Don had promised a free house, a home with no parents, or anything like that. In May of 1976, Radio Dublin made known details of its local radio campaign. On the 2nd of the month, the station announced that 1,850 signatures in favour of independent local radio had been collected. Radio Dublin were to host a march to Dáil Éireann to take place on Saturday, June the 12th. By the beginning of June, Radio Laxey was back on 217, Capital Radio was on 220 metres, a new station, Premier Radio was operating on 222, and of course Radio Dublin was on 253. This rather hectic pirate activity, plus the 6,000 signatures now reported to be collected, pointed towards this march being more successful than anyone might have expected. On the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday preceding the march, Radio Dublin came on the air advertising Saturday's big event, saying that 100,000 signatures had now been collected. At 1 p.m. on Saturday, the 12th of June, 1976, the Radio Dublin Free Radio Campaign March started. The crowd was as little down on expectations. The attendance figure was not 100,000, nor was it 6,500, nor 1,850. In fact, only a handful of people walked on the Dáil that day. Ken Sheen remembers that he felt like a right twerp, as no doubt did the other 20 people who watched Dr. Don present a Garda with an application for a license to broadcast. With that, the handful scattered to the pub for a drink, under the Divine Trinity. The official story behind Alternative Radio Dublin, ARD, as told in the ARD souvenir special, goes as follows. The daddy of them all, Dr. Don, was one of the founders of ARD back in 1975. It was at his home in Cabra that weekend broadcast took place. In fact, Radio Dublin operated from Don's house in 1975. ARD didn't arrive on the scene until the summer of 76. And when it did, it wasn't Dr. Don, who was behind the station, but Mark Story, Declan Meehan, and David Kelly, the Divine Trinity. Mark had been involved in Radio Dublin since the days when Roger Lloyd was in charge. But Mark didn't like what was happening to the station, and he didn't get on too well with the station engineer, Eamon Cook. So with David, who'd been living in Spain for a while, and with Declan, he set up an alternative to existing Radio Dublin, with the predictable name of Alternative Radio Dublin, ARD. Just prior to the founding of ARD, Mark and Declan had become involved with yet another RTE radio experiment, Radio Trinity. The station operated out of Trinity College, Dublin, where Mark was studying law. Over the Whit Bank holiday, this experiment was to give Declan and Mark their first taste of professional radio. Experienced they were, and it was to be put to good use in ARD. On July the 31st, 1976, ARD put out a test broadcast on 217 metres. By Friday, August the 6th, the station was renamed Radio Clio and operated on 218 metres. The two DJs on air that Friday were Arno St. Jude, Meehan, and Tom Bell, David. By the 22nd of the month, the station had reverted to its original name, ARD. The station, however, soon began to lose its sense of direction. Declan Meehan remembers, "We went through various phases of being the album station, the black music station, the country station, and so on. But even at this stage, the one thing that separated ARD from the rest of the herd was their professionalism." Over the following months, Radio Dublin was to extend broadcasting hours even further. ARD, on the other hand, broadcast short yet snappy programs. At ARD, it was quality, not quantity, that got precedence. During the month of September, the rivalry between Radio Dublin and ARD was just getting underway when suddenly Radio Dublin was raided. ARD had taken the precaution of coming on air after Dr. Don. This way, the department would concentrate on the first pirate signal picked up and then, in theory, would leave ARD alone. So far, it seemed to be working. On September the 15th, the department raided Dr. Don's house in Cabra at around midday. But they failed to get the transmitter. Eamon Cook had buried it in the back garden. So 2 days after the raid, Radio Dublin were back on 227 metres, explaining what had happened. DJ Kieran Murray remembers that it was a moving broadcast. Notice was also given that for the present, at any rate, nighttime transmissions were being suspended. When Radio Dublin came back on the air on October the 3rd, a watch was being kept for departmental activity. A Post and Telegraph's lorry was spotted that afternoon, and at 4 p.m. the station closed. No more was seen of the lorry. By the middle of the month, most of the shock had worn off, but a watch was still being kept during broadcasts. As 1976 drew to a close, Radio Dublin extended its broadcasting hours further. And Dr. Don got quite a coup by interviewing Marianne Faithfull on November the 14th, Christmas. 76 came and went, with Radio Dublin broadcasting on 253 metres. ARD on 215 and Premier on 222. The year was now 1977, the most important year ever in the development of Irish pirate radio. In February 1977, Radio Dublin introduced a new format. Up to this, in common with most of the other hobby pirates, the exception being ARD, Radio Dublin had broadcast golden oldie after golden oldie. The simple truth being that stations could not afford new records. But on February the 6th, Radio Dublin introduced a new format of DJs playing disco music. This, along with their extended broadcasting hours, marked an important development in the history of Irish radio. Unfortunately for the new DJs, the schedule soon hit a major snag, another raid. Only a week after the new schedule was introduced, on February the 13th, Radio Dublin closed down twice. At 2 p.m, transmissions came to an abrupt halt due to a raid scare, and the station closed once more at 5:30 p.m. Everybody connected with the station was tense. 1 week later, Radio Dublin again took to the airwaves. This time, though, a small precaution had been taken to confuse the Department of Posts and Telegraphs. The main Radio Dublin transmitter was still in Don Moore's house in Cabra, but a second rig had been installed in Eamon Cook's in Inchicore. In the event of a raid scare, the second transmitter was meant to be turned on. This would hopefully confuse the department and save the main 253 transmitter. That afternoon, the 12th, the department raided Moore's house. The trick hadn't worked. Don's nerves was getting worse. The next Saturday, Don went to the General Post Office in Dublin's O'Connell Street. At 2 p.m. he covered his clothes in petrol and set himself alight. Don Moore sat there smouldering for several minutes until two units of the Dublin Fire Brigade put him out. The next day, DJ Paul Downey officially closed down Radio Dublin and 253 fell silent. Radio Dublin had already made several test transmissions from a number of locations in Ballyfermot, Clondalkin, and from Eamon Cook's house in Inchicore. Eamon had been doing some standby broadcasts in the event of Don Moore's home being raided, and a new Radio Dublin transmitter had just been built. Eamon kept this transmitter in his house. For a while now, relations between Eamon and Don had been strained. Two ambitious people in one small station was too much. And following Don's fiery stunt at the GPO, the Radio Dublin operation was moved from Cabra to Eamon's house. Keen rivalry brings out the worst in people. It rouses our deepest emotions. In the unregulated limelight of pirate radio, there was only ever room for one ego. The Sunday of the move, Dr. Don turned up outside Eamon's terraced house, ready to open Radio Dublin. But Eamon wouldn't let him in, saying that it may have been Dr. Don's station, but it was his transmitter. Therefore, it was Radio Dublin from Inchicore, and Don's services were no longer required. It was May the 29th, 1977, and Radio Dublin broadcasts from 1:45 p.m. to 5 p.m. on 253 metres, with some ex-premier disc jockeys brought in for the occasion. Don was not to take this departure from Radio Dublin at an end. By the first weekend in June, there were two Radio Dublins on the air, Eamon Cook's station and Dr. Don's station, which he operated from his house on an old transmitter. Don referred to his station as Old Radio Dublin, implying it was the original. His operation broadcast from 2:15 p.m. to 7 p.m. on 254.5 metres. Eamon Cook, however, operated from 1:45 p.m. to 6 p.m. with new DJs like Jimmy Day, Alan King, Jimmy St. Ledger, Sylvie, and some jocks from Nace, who travelled up to do their shows every Sunday. The next day, June Bank Holiday, Monday of 1977, the two Radio Dublin broadcasts with more or less the same format as used on a Sunday, Cook announced that he had received 150 phone calls in support from the people. His station played disc music while Don played the more traditional Radio Dublin diet of golden oldies. Both stations continued for a couple of weeks, until June the 12th, when Dr. Don turned up on ARD's doorstep. The same day, Radio Dublin closed down at 3:30 p.m. for fear of a raid. With Cook in sole command of Radio Dublin, his stubborn personality was free to express itself. On June the 19th, Radio Dublin broadcast an election special, notable for one major fact. The station remained on air for 24 hours non-stop. It therefore became the first Irish radio station licensed or unlicensed to do so. Don finally decided to close Old Radio Dublin and join up with Declan, Mark and David, who were operating ARD from a shed in Drimnagh. This new station is going to be the biggest thing in history of Irish free radio, said Don Moore. As ARD went back on air on July the 31st, initially the three were a bit weary of Don. But an agreement was reached and ARD moved out of David's garden into Don's living room in Cabra. It took a long time for the ARD crew to pull together. Initially, Mark, David and Declan kept broadcasting in their own right with Radio Pandora on 208 metres, while at the same time planning ARD with Dr. Don. But Pandora was raided on June the 19th and Declan went to Radio Dublin for a short spell. It was to be a long while before ARD would hope to challenge the might of Radio Dublin, which over the August bank holiday broadcast special programmes. They began at 2 p.m. on July the 30th and went right through to 2 a.m. August 1977. A total of 60 hours non-stop broadcasting.
Take your radio on to 253 Radio Dublin. 88 kilohertz AM, 105 FM in stereo and shortwave. This is Radio Dublin International.
Up until Christmas 1977, Irish pirate radio stations had been, without exception, primitive. As a rule, transmitters were homemade and tended to broadcast more static than signal, the worn records and fluffy needles, completing the major inferior sound. Then in late 77, Radio Dublin installed a superior transmitter. It was homemade, built by Billy Eberl, but it was of a superior quality, and for once a pirate signal didn't sound like one. Reception of Radio Dublin over the capital was excellent, and most people could pick up the pirate as clearly as they could RTE. The telephonic quality was gone, and so was the old format. In these days of MTV, Music Box and Skytrax, it's hard to appreciate just how refreshing Radio Dublin actually sounded back in the earlys, 1978. Daytime reception of foreign radio stations in the capital was fairly hopeless. There really was only Radio Erden, with its static diet of programmes. Then all of a sudden there was an alternative, chatty personality DJs playing plenty of music. On the day, James Dillon, Mike Eastwood and Jerry Campbell all joined Radio Dublin. On November the 27th, Marty Hall began his career on Radio Dublin. Today he uses his real name, Marty Whelan. And on December the 20th, another new jock, Jason Main, started on ARD. With all this new talent, it's not hard to see why Radio Dublin took off like a bomb. In fact, Eamon Cook was so convinced that only Gay Byrne commanded a sizable audience for his mid-morning show on Radio Erden, that when it finished, Radio Dublin would welcome back its listeners who had turned to RTE. Things in pirate radio were going easy. DJ Kieran Murray remembers his first broadcast on Radio Dublin as being typical. John Clark had just finished his programme and there was nobody else to go on. Yours truly was hanging around, answering the phones at the time. And Eamon sort of said to me, "Would you like to go on and take over?" I was very nervous about it, but Kieran did go on and found himself coming back every Sunday. At 8 a.m. on Christmas Eve 1977, Radio Dublin started its marathon Christmas broadcasting schedule. Programmes were to continue non-stop until Wednesday the 28th. Over 100 hours of non-stop transmitting. DJ James Dillon remembers the factors that made his schedule possible, between the fact that most guys were on holidays and it was coming up towards Christmas. It seemed like a good idea to go on and broadcast all day, every day, right up to the new year. It is impossible to estimate the audience of Radio Dublin that Christmas, but the new programming plus the new transmitter meant for certain that more people than ever before became aware of the station's existence. The public reaction to Radio Dublin's Christmas blitz on the airwaves was amazing. Like Caroline before it, the station had tapped a new market. No longer were radio enthusiasts the only listeners to pirate radio. James Dillon remembers that for the first time people started listening in shops, offices, factories, and we couldn't believe it. Before, if one person rang in from Santry, like, everybody was leaping. Somebody in Santry heard us. All of a sudden the line was jammed. You'd give out the number and people would say, "I've been trying to get through for 3 hours." On New Year's Day, a triumphant Eamon Cook broadcast his station news, where he thanked the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Michael Collins, for appearing on the station. He also thanked the press for all their good publicity. He thanked the listeners and the staff. Many, many thanks to Frank Murray, the captain, also announced new broadcasting hours. The station must operate from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays, with non-stop broadcasting all weekend. This sort of schedule had never been tried before by any Irish radio station. Up to this, pirate operations were trotted out during a Sunday lunchtime. It was a bit like walking the dog, but less energetic. Going into 1978, Radio Dublin was sitting pretty. It had unveiled broadcast experience, a large talented staff, at this time including Mike Eastwood, James Dillon, Neil O'Shea, Marty Whelan and Dave Fanning. With this talent, the larger transmitter and extended broadcasting hours, all the strands interwove and Radio Dublin ceased to be a hobby station and became a fully commercial venture. The station accepted advertising and sponsored programmes, as did RTE Radio until 1981. Prior to Christmas of 77, Radio Dublin had been a hobby affair, characterised by irregular broadcasts. There was no commitment to an audience or to advertisers. As 1977 drew to a close, advertising revenue began to trickle into the station from the odd company, like the Red Corner Shop and the Angel Boutique, chain owned by Noel Kirwan. Potential advertising revenue was responsible for the bringing in the new transmitter. With this increase in power came a larger catchment area, and therefore more potential advertisers, all bringing in money, the lifeblood of a radio station. The new disco DJs were proving very popular with a young audience bored with RTE. The format was more or less non-stop music, recalls James Dillon. With plenty of requests, the more requests the better, because it meant you kept one person happy when you played a request for them. There were in fact so many requests that DJs would often interrupt songs to hear their own voices and utter immortal lines like, "This is for Derek from Guess Who." At the time, hobby broadcasts looked on Radio Dublin as an extension of Cook's eccentric personality. Many felt that broadcasting 7 days a week was a sure sign of insanity. Ken Sheen recalls that it was just sheer folly, madness really. It would require a very special kind of individual to make his home a broadcasting station. Roger Lloyd also gives Cook credit for putting pirate radio on the map in Ireland. He was, in Roger's words, a very courageous man. Over the next few months, Eamon Cook was going to need all the courage he could find, as his world would disintegrate around his ears. The rise of Radio Dublin from a weekend hobby station to a small commercial enterprise had been viewed with distaste by the Department of Post and Telegraphs. When Eamon Cook announced that a free radio march was to take place on January the 21st, it all became too much. The following 3 weeks were to prove the most eventful in the history of Irish radio. On Tuesday, January the 17th, 1978, 6 days before the launch of the new look ARD, and 4 days before the march, Radio Dublin was raided. This was the first raid on the station since going commercial. At approximately 7 p.m, several uniformed Gardaí under the direction of Detective Sergeant John McGuire, an investigator from the department, entered into the Radio Dublin studios in Inchicore. They searched the premises for transmitting equipment, and in what the captain remembers as the most vicious raid ever, record decks were turned over, tapes and papers were scattered, and they broke windows and hurled a brick through the upstairs window. The men continued their senseless rampage until 7:08 p.m. when they presented a search warrant, took the transmitter and left. However, Cook had taken prior measures to ensure that any raiding party took as little as possible. On hearing the alarm, the homemade transmitter was quickly broken down into unrecognizable junk. Some parts would even be put into plastic bags and suspended off the ball cock in the toilet. Most of the time, they couldn't take anything because there was nothing there to take, remembers Cook. It was in little bits scattered round here, there and everywhere. The following is an extract from Detective Sergeant McGuire's official statement on the Radio Dublin raid of January the 17th. I approached the front door of number 3 Sarsfield Road with Sergeant Reardon. Having knocked at the door, it was partially opened by Mr. Eamon Cook, who was known to me as being the owner of the house. Mr. Cook attempted to close the door in my face, but I entered the hallway, taking Sergeant Reardon with me. Sergeant Reardon signaled to Detective Sergeant McLaughlin and Haynes, who were outside on the roadway. I went immediately to the rear ground floor dining room. I heard a noise from the room immediately upstairs, as if a number of people were moving about. I saw a wire leading from the record deck in the front sitting room to a hole which obviously led to an upstairs room. I also saw a door leading from the rear dining room. This door was locked and bolted on the side. For me, I was unable to open the same door. Sergeant McLaughlin, who in the meantime had gone to the rear garden of the premises, unlocked the bolt on this door and I ascended the stairway. I entered the bathroom and saw a man washing his hands, and whom I know to be Mr. William Sergeant Sarge. I made another search of the room, accompanied by Mr. O'Neill and Mr. Dempsey of the radio section, and I lifted the floor coverings in the small hallway outside the upstairs rooms, and saw a loose floorboard which I lifted, and saw a piece of radio equipment and two other pieces of equipment. I also took possession of the two turntable record decks from the front sitting room, and later gave same to Mr. O'Neill. In his written statement, Detective Sergeant McLaughlin, who opened the back door, explains how he accomplished this. The back door and window of which gave entry to a small kitchen, and notices warning of high tension wires and beware danger. Inside the glass panel in this door, I saw bare wires about 6 inches apart. I found a length of timber, and with this, I broke the glass in the door without touching the wires. On entering the kitchen, I found another locked door with a glass panel leading to the bottom of the stairs, and also crisscrossed with wire and warning notices. Again, I had to force the glass panel and release the bolt. From these Garda statements, the term raid might seem to be an exaggeration. In fact, these terms made a raid sound positively civilized. When the raiding parties left, it didn't take much to get a station back on the air. There were always several transmitters in different stages of construction stashed around the place. A couple of hours and some creative electronics later, the station would be back to normal. The total cost of a transmitter was only a few hundred pounds, and with Cook's backing from advertisers like Telerents, the captain could afford to run the gauntlet. In true buccaneering style, within 5 hours of that vicious raid, the captain had Radio Dublin back on the air. The record decks were broken, which resulted in the background music for station news speeding up and slowing down. The captain sounded weary, tired, as he explained what happened and that he had not wanted trouble after the raid. War, it seems to be. Cook also announced an extension of broadcasting hours. Radio Dublin was too defiantly to stay on air until the following Saturday. Cook concluded his news with a message to his listeners, and one must speculate, a dare to the department. Well, you have Radio Dublin back. The following day saw the captain splashed all over the newspapers. 10% RTE, 90% us, is how Cook summed up his audience. But judge for yourself. Go into any shop, pub, boutique or factory and hear what's on. It's us. The morning of the 21st dawned bright and clear. By 2 o'clock, O'Connell Street was blocked by over 2,000 young people waving banners and scarves. Then the march sneaked its way southwards towards the Dáil, broadcasting as it went. Although Ken Sheen was ensconced in O'Dwyer's during the march, he did drop in on Eamon Cook that night. He can clearly remember the captain lying over a table in the half light. On sensing Ken, Cook looked up and with a weary smile said, "This is the happiest day of my life." For years after, Radio Dublin rode on the crest of a wave. Everywhere you went, people were listening to the station. Radio Dublin carried on leading the way, setting the trends and listening to government threats of closure. Not only listeners, but advertisers also turned in droves to Radio Dublin and away from RTE. Politicians used the station during elections, even promised action on independent radio, but nothing ever happened. Just the usual wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. In 1978, Radio Dublin was legally registered as a limited company, but we did not get, and to this day,